From WILL's Illinois Newsroom, this is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. It's Friday, October 16th. Coming up, black farmers in the Midwest historically struggled with all the challenges facing other farmers, but they were also held back by systemic racism. We'll learn more about the challenges of being a black farmer in the Midwest from Harvest Public Media. But first, these headlines. The confirmation hearing of Supreme Court nominee Amy Coney Barrett wrapped up yesterday in the U.S. Senate. Illinois Democrat Dick Durbin is a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee that held that hearing. Durbin says he's skeptical of Barrett's answers when she was asked repeatedly about an issue that will come before the Supreme Court next month.
Tell us about the president's promise that his Supreme Court nominee is going to eliminate the Affordable Care Act. Well, she denied it time after time. The question is, who do you believe? The president, who's made it clear for years what he wants to achieve through the Supreme Court, or this nominee?
Durbin made his comments on the 21st show. The Senate Judiciary Committee is scheduled to vote on Barrett's nomination next Thursday. That vote would advance her nomination to the full Senate. State legislators and renewable energy stakeholders called for clean energy reform and increased diversity and inclusion in the renewable energy industry at a news conference this week. Illinois Newsroom's Lesha Bushak has more.
State Representative Will Davis, along with other members of the Illinois Legislative Black Caucus and other backers of the Path to 100 Act, proposed a plan that focuses on ensuring marginalized communities have access to renewable jobs through things like workforce development programs. Davis also pushed to bolster access to community solar projects like the Solar for All program, which targets low-income communities.
We feel that we're in a space right now that in order to be successful, we have to put some strong requirements on making sure that the companies that want to work in this space are acknowledging and recognizing the need to be diverse and inclusive.
The Path to 100 Act is one of two competing bills that aim to address Illinois' renewable energy funding crisis. The other is the Clean Energy Jobs Act, which aims to bring Illinois to 100% renewable energy by 2050. I'm Lesha Bushak, Illinois Newsroom.
A team at Washington University in St. Louis is testing whether lab-made antibodies could be used as a treatment for COVID-19. These monoclonal antibodies attach to the spike proteins on the outside of the coronavirus and prevent it from infecting human cells. The group is testing antibodies developed by pharmaceutical giants Eli Lilly and Regeneron. Dr. Rachel Presti is an infectious disease specialist at WashU. She says COVID-19 patients who volunteer for the study will either receive the antibody treatment or a placebo.
For the people who are in the hospital, we're looking to see if we can shorten their hospital stay, if we can shorten the amount of time they're on oxygen, and, you know, ultimately, if we can prevent people from dying from the infection.
The team is also testing whether these antibodies can help reduce the severity of COVID-19 in patients with more mild infections. As women march across the country tomorrow, there's an opportunity to do so in Champaign as well. The CU Women's March and Rally starts tomorrow at noon at Westside Park in downtown Champaign. Co-organizer Susie Kundrat says in a news release that the event is happening, quote, to defend this election and to fight for equality in all its forms, end quote. The event in Champaign is one of more than 350 women's marches across the country scheduled for tomorrow. You can find more information at the event's Facebook page. Search for CU Women's Rally and March 2020. Still to come, we'll learn about the challenges facing black farmers in the Midwest, both historically and today. That's next on 217 Today.
Hey, this is Eunice Alpasan, engagement producer for the 21st. You can help shape our news coverage. Here's how it works. Just text the word TALK to 217-803-0730. We'll send you weekly questions on issues affecting Illinois. We might even mention your answers on the 21st. Text TALK to 217-803-0730 and join the conversation.
This is 217 Today. I'm Brian Moline. Most Midwest farmers are white. In 1900, there were about 300 black farm families in Iowa. Only about half remained in 1970, and the numbers in Iowa and Illinois continued to decline for decades. Despite some recent increases, Harvest Public Media's Amy Mayer explores why there are few black farmers in the Midwest.
Driving along Highway 150 in Fayette County, Iowa, you see a giant propane tank painted to look like a watermelon. It's the site of a produce stand, owned and operated by one black family until the 1990s, the family of Atrus Stepp.
Everybody's got good things to say about Eddie.
That's Charles Downs. He's white and bought the place from Stepp's daughter. Stepp died in 1993 at the age of 97.
Conservatively, I say it's been here 80 years, at least, and it's probably close, maybe 100.
Stepp's family traces roots to a small but thriving African-American farm community. Before the Civil War, a group of people of color found their way to Fayette County. Trinity Christian College history professor David Brodnack Sr. says with the assistance of a white minister, they bought their own land.
These black farmers, they left their white neighbors alone, and their white neighbors eventually left them alone.
Brodnack says after the so-called Fayette mulattoes, many of them were of mixed race, other African Americans came to Iowa and other Midwest states. He says some 19th century black families saw owning land as a first but not final step toward economic freedom.
You get yourself some land, and then you send your kids to school, and then you have even more economic power. So in that sense, you don't necessarily need to hold on to that land.
Other scholars have posited that in the upper Midwest and Plains states, black families leveraged land for a couple of generations to catapult themselves into comfortable lives in more urban areas. But Valerie Grimm, an Indiana University professor of African American and African Diaspora Studies, says that may be the case for some, but...
That's not my experience in talking to black landowners at all. It was always property that you kept to protect your family.
So there would always be a home to return to. Meanwhile, Grimm says agriculture in the 20th century threw many hurdles up for African Americans. Seed dealers who wouldn't sell to black farmers, black land-grant universities that didn't have adequate research money, and federal farm programs that denied loans to black farmers. By the early 21st century, black farmers had won more than $2 billion in settlements from discrimination cases against the U.S. Department of Agriculture. Grimm says even more is needed, like a fund to help African-American farmers get started.
It wouldn't make up for 400 years of domination, oppression, and discrimination, but certainly it would increase the percentage of blacks involved in farming.
But in Fayette County, Iowa, there's another reason for the loss of black farmers: assimilation. Jeff Schimmick identifies as white, but he's also a grandson of Addie Stepp, of that pioneering black farm family. Schimmick's generation grew up unaware of their African-American lineage. He recalls speaking with another man, one who identifies as black, who also comes from one of those early families.
Well, he says some members of the community just wanted to act as white as they could and assimilate into the whites as best they could, and he says your granddad was that way.
Schimmick and his cousin Brian Stepp say no one really talked about their mixed-race background when they were growing up. Brian Stepp worked on the farm with their grandfather for about 15 years.
Brian, you put $1,000 into this place every year and you'll have something when I die. Look where I am. I had $1,000 every year.
Even if a Stepp descendant had kept farming, it wouldn't change the fact that in 2012 and 2017, the Census of Agriculture showed Fayette County had no self-identified black or African-American farmers. But statewide, the tiny number is growing, mostly in urban areas, and many are recent immigrants. Brodnack, the historian, says farming isn't among the current calls for black economic empowerment.
What I haven't seen is that being addressed from a perspective of farming and land ownership, right? Not saying that no one has said that, but it definitely does not seem to be any kind of big part of the conversation in 2020.
But black restaurant owners, urban gardeners, and local food activists are renewing conversations about who grows their food. All signs that African-American interest in agriculture is growing, which ultimately could bring about a new generation of black farmers in the Midwest. Amy Mayer, Harvest Public Media.
And finally, meteorologist Andrew Pritchard says we should see some sunshine today with a high of 59 degrees. It could be breezy at times with the wind out of the southwest gusting up to 30 miles per hour. That's it for today. 217 Today is produced by Olivia Butts. Reporting today contributed by Lesha Bushak, Shayla Farzan, and Amy Mayer. Music by the Kilbourne Alley Blues Band. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. I'm Brian Moldine. 217 Today is a production of Illinois Public Media. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you again on Monday. Have a great weekend.